I would like first to thank the organizers for inviting me. I would like also to thank Michael for the nice introduction he gave me for interstitial hypertension. So I'm going to talk to a certain extent about interstitial hypertension, the effect it has on essentially drug penetration in tumors. But most of my talk is going to be related to the interstitial matrix and how the interstitial matrix can impede or hinder transport, especially of large molecules. There's not much of an effect of the interstitial matrix on the transport of small molecules. So if you consider this as the microcirculation in a tumor, so you have a blood vessel here, you have your tumor cells, the extracellular matrix, and the lymphatic vessels. The dogma for lymphatic vessel is that there are none in tumors except they localize at the edge. So essentially tumor cells invade the lymphatic vessels that are at the juncture of the normal tissue and the tumor. So if you inject a small cytotoxic agent in a tumor, it should come out of all the blood vessels by diffusion without any problem. If you inject a large molecule, let's say I'm going to talk a lot about virus or liposome, well, they're going to come out of some blood vessels, but not of others. If you now inject in that tumor a large molecule because you want a better distribution of a virus, again, there's serious limitation. There's almost no penetration. This is shown in the next slide here. So what we did here was to inject liposomes. And the spots you have here, this is fluorescently labeled liposome outside the blood vessel in the tumor 24 hours after the injection. And you see there's areas in the tumor where there's no excitation of those liposomes. Now, if you take a needle, inject a virus inside a tumor, and the virus can be expressing the green fluorescent protein, so you can't see where the virus infects cells. So this is a nasal tract here, and you can see that the infection is mostly localized along the nasal tract. So essentially, there's no distribution, significant distribution, away from the nasal tract. I'll show more convincing examples as we're going along. So what are the main barriers? So one barrier is the interstitial hypertension and essentially convective flow, which essentially is depending on hydrostatic pressure difference, helps transport, let's say, from the vascular space to the interstitial space, and also at the tumor head, there's a pressure gradient. So the pressure is flat in a tumor, the hydrostatic pressure drops rapidly at the edge. So that's where you have your convective flow. In the center, there's almost no convection. So in the center, what's important is diffusion, since convection is not playing a significant role. And what limits diffusion is the interstitial matrix. So I'm going to talk in the next few slides about pressure, which Michael already introduced to a certain extent. But these are measurements we did in several human cancers. You see, normal tissues, the pressures are very low. They're around 0 mmHg. If you look at several tumor types, you see that pressure are very elevated. What does pressure mean for drug delivery? So, as I was saying before, there's a drop in pressure at the tumor edge. So essentially, the vessels at the tumor edge, there's convective flow outside of those vessels. So the macromolecules you inject, liposomes or antibodies, will extravasate at the edge. But since there's no convective flow, there's no pressure difference in the center, then the large molecules are not going to come out. So what's the evidence of that? So we measured in tumors the microvascular pressure at the surface of a tumor and the interstitial blood pressure in the center. And what we find out, this is a control group, there's no pressure difference between the pressure in the periphery and essentially the pressure in the center of the tumor. So in the center of the tumor, you expect there's no convective flow since there's no pressure gradient. So is there ways of inducing pressure gradient? Yes. So we treated mice with DC101. DC101 is an antibody against VEGFR2. And it's one of the most, VEGF is one of the most important inducers in tumors of increasing vascular permeability. We've shown in the past that with antibodies against VEGF, antibodies against VEGFR2, you get significant reductions in pressure, about 75% reduction in pressure in those tumors. So here we wanted to know with DC1, can we induce a pressure gradient, and what does it mean in terms of pushing proteins inside outside of blood vessels? So we first showed that within 24, 48 hours, you get a significant pressure gradient that's induced. When you look at albumin distribution that was injected, so this is the control group, this is the DC1 group. This is a busy slide, but the only thing we need to look at is the quantification of albumin extravasation as a distance of the function of a blood vessel. In the control group, there's a rapid decline of the concentration of albumin. Whereas if you look at the treated group, the decline is less steep. So what we're speculating here is that this increased convective flow was able to carry the protein to a certain distance from the blood vessels. So the rest of the talk, I'm going to focus on interstitial matrix and how it reduces diffusion in tumors. So what is the interstitial matrix? So it's formed of collagen fibers, as you see here, and there's proteoglycan subunits that attach those collagen fibers. Some of the proteoglycans that are well known are called like Vicarin, Lumican. What these proteoglycans do, they organize the matrix. So they bind to the collagen, and by binding to collagen, they provide the stiffness to collagen. So in other words, if you knock down in a new mice in a transgenic mice model a protein like Vicarin, your skin becomes very soft. So showing that the organization of the matrix is controlled by those proteoglycans, which also thought to have some effect on transport, but we don't understand at this point if these effects on transport are due to differences in concentration or differences in organization. Another molecule that's important is hyaluronic acid. It's also known as hyaluronan. And that has been shown to impede water transport significantly. It's a large molecular weight molecule. It's over 1 million in molecular weight. It's mostly formed of it's a 2 disaccharide unit. And it provides like I was saying, resistance to water flow through tissues. It probably actually helps diffusion, from what we understand, but I'm not going to enter that specific part. So what are the techniques that we use characterize interstitial transport and interstitial matrix composition and structure? So we're going to measure, I'm going to show you the principle on how we measure with fluorescence recovery after photoablation, which we call FRAP, how we measure diffusion. The other technique we use is to measure hydraulic conductivity, which is it's equal to the ease of fluid movement. And one of the methods used is called the clamp method. It's simple. You just cut a piece of tumor, put it in a chamber, apply a pressure gradient across that chamber, look at the movement of water through that piece of tissue, and then you have an idea of how fast the water moves through that piece of tissue. When we look at the interstitial matrix composition and structure, in the lab, we do a lot of immunostaining. So we'll do immunostaining for collagen type 1. We'll do immunostaining for hyaluronan, proteoglycans. You can also analyze by biochemical assays the extracellular matrix molecules. And by the end of my talk, I'll give you some I'll show some imaging that we're doing with second harmonic imaging and multi-photon scanning microscopy. That provides us an idea of the structure of collagen fibers, and how those fibers can change with treatment. So this is just to give you an idea on how we measure with FRAP diffusion in the tumor. Here's our mice with our mice as a window perforation on the skin. So it's a transparent window, so we see the tumor vessel. So we're able to apply a laser light to that window. And then when we apply a laser light, we bleach. This is our bleach here. So we bleach about 40 micron of the tissue. And what we do is we measure the intensity. So we measure the recovery. So we bleach all our fluorescent molecules out of here, and we measure the recovery in that area. So it gives us an idea of what the diffusion is in the tumor. So some of the diffusion measurements we've done with this technique have shown that this is in a single tumor. All the variations can vary by over one order of magnitude, depending on the area where you bleach the tissue. We also shown that in different tumors, there's different diffusion coefficient can vary by two or three orders of magnitude, depending on the molecule you're using, or depending on the molecular size, the tumor type, and if it's rich or poor in collagen. To give you an idea of the time molecules with time of diffusion of molecules, depending on size, if you have IgG, for example, to move 100 micron by diffusion, it could take half an hour. Virus and liposomes, we're talking about liposomes usually used for treatment about 100 nanometer in size. Liposome can go anywhere from 50 nanometers to over 400 microns in size. So it could take days for a virus and liposome to move a small distance of 100 micron. So the questions we had at this point were, so what are the mechanism, or what are the constituents of the matrix that will influence transport through the interstitial space? And essentially, we proposed the following. We said, well, in the brain, there's not a lot of collagen. And we have previous experience with other studies that we've done that maybe there's collagen to play a role. And what we figured out is with our models, so this essentially, we took the same tumor and planted a melanoma in the skin, in the dorsal skin fold chamber, and or in a cranial one of the model we have, and then measured the diffusion. And what we found out is that in the cranial window, which is data shown here, diffusion is much faster, and in the dorsal chamber, you have a slower diffusion. And if you look at the composition of the dorsal chamber versus the cranial window, this is collagen 1 immunostaining and showing there's certainly more collagen in the dorsal chamber compared to the cranial window. The other thing that's interesting, obviously, here is that as a function of tumor size, you expect to see a decrease in diffusion. So to further prove that collagen was playing a role, we used bacterial collagenase. Bacterial collagenase is very effective at cutting collagen, at breaking it down. And what we found out is that, in fact, with collagenase treatment, we could increase diffusion by close to twofold. With hyaluronidase today, there was no significant difference, and it gave an impression that there even a decrease in diffusion with hyaluronidase treatment. So some of the next question was to look at larger molecules like viral vectors. So all the work I'm going to talk about next is related to oncolytic viral therapy. So, and the virus we're using is herpes simplex virus. It's about 150 nanometers in diameter, and it's replication competent. What that means, it's going to replicate in tumor cell, but it's not going to be able to form progeny in normal cells, even if it infects normal cells. There's no. So essentially, you have progeny formations, which eventually kills the cell, and the progeny can spread, and then you have further infection. But essentially, that nice concept does not work really because of limitations in transport. So here, just to show what I was just mentioning now, what you see in red is the collagen fibers here, and what we see in green is the viral particle. And this is the quantification here. So in areas where essentially you have high collagen levels, you have very low penetration of the viral particle, whereas in area where you have significantly lower collagen levels, you have higher viral particle accumulation. This is also shown here in a nasal chamber. This is virus alone, and this is with additional collagenase. You got a much better distribution of the virus throughout the tumor. This is the quantification, showing the significant increase of the collagenase distribution. And when we look at efficacy of treatment, when we combine the virus with collagenase treatment, with this shown here, show the simply longer increase in growth delay compared to collagenase treatment alone or virus treatment alone. So that was bacterial collagenase. And there's issue with using bacterial collagenase for treating humans. So we wanted to know what's the role of mammalian collagenase. And what we did is overexpressed in tumor cells, matrix metalloproteinase 1 and matrix metalloproteinase 8. So MMP1 and MMP8. And what we found out when we did that in these tumors, and we went in with a needle, injected our virus, and you see, we cannot detect the virus in the center of the tumor. But we could be able to detect some virus with MMP1 overexpression or MMP8 overexpression. So this shows the quantification, and also shows that even with our strategy, the distribution is not very effective. In other words, you can see that clearly here from the picture. But the treatment was effective. So this is the MM1 overexpressing tumor. This is the MMP8 overexpressing tumors. So when we inject HSV in the PBS control, compared to the MMP1 overexpressing, we get significantly higher tumor growth delay, and the same for MMP8. So now you'll ask me, can we use this as a strategy to treat patients? And you'll say, well, the reason you probably cannot use it is because MMPs are going to degrade the matrix and are going to influence tumor progression, and you're going to get more metastases. That may be the case for MMP1, but not the case for MMP8. Several studies have shown now that MMP8 inhibits tumor progression. So you overexpress MMP8 in tumors, you get smaller tumors, you get less metastases. The mechanisms are not known at this stage. It's been known for 3 or 4 years, so eventually somebody's going to come up with it. The interesting thing we found here is we were expecting that MMP1 and MMP8 would change collagen levels. But that's not what happened. We look at collagen, there was no difference at all. And to a certain extent, it didn't surprise us. Because the MMPs degrade collagen at one site. If you take bacterial collagenase, they can't degrade at three or four different sites along a collagen molecule. So But we look at our proteoglycans, and we find there was a difference. So we look at sulfated GAG here corresponds to proteoglycans. There's a significant reduction in the level of sulfated GAG in MMP1 and MMP8 tumors, which could mean, I said before, initially, that the proteoglycan organizes the matrix. So it's possible by changing those levels that matrix for fibrillar organization is modified. So that's why when you inject, you could have a better spread. So I'm going to switch gear here, and I'm going to talk about how killing tumor cell can help you to improve transplant. So the hypothesis was simple. You induce tumor cell apoptosis, and you induce the formation of channels. So if you kill enough cells in the tumor, those dead cells are going to form void spaces, and those void spaces are going to connect and form channels. So when you inject under convection a virus, there should be a bit of spread in the tumor. So this is a model. We first took a genetic approach, and we essentially activated caspase 8 in our tumor cells. And when we did that, we find out there was more tunnel positive cell. Caspase 8 essentially is a significant inducer of apoptosis. We also saw there was a reduction in tumor cell density. And when we look at the organization of the apoptotic channels, we found actually that there was. You see, there's the brown here represents the apoptosis, and you see the void spaces, and they seem to connect. So the level of apoptosis to obtain those channels can be as low as 4 or 5%, and you'll still have formation of channels. So when we injected the virus here, the virus was expressing GFP. So that's how we look at viral infection. And we find out this is the control. There's limited infection of the tumor cells. And there's significantly greater distribution of the virus. Obviously, there's areas where the virus didn't penetrate at all, you can see here. So this is the advantage we get with induction of apoptosis. We get about 2.5-fold greater infection of tumor cells. We can reproduce those data with cytotoxic agent. The data I show here is with combination of Taxol or paclitaxel that's used for treating women with breast cancer, and TRAIL. TRAIL is an agent that's being developed by Genentech at this stage. It's still in clinical trials. It's a significant inducer of tumor cell apoptosis. The reason we combine, specifically in this tumor, paclitaxel and TRAIL was because paclitaxel itself in this breast cancer did not induce significant apoptosis. But from the literature, it was clear that the combination of paclitaxel and TRAIL would improve, would induce a greater amount of apoptosis, because what happens, a great amount of cytotoxic agents upregulate TNF receptors or TRAIL receptors, if you want. And that led to significantly greater apoptosis. I'm not showing that here. I just want to show the end result. So again here, there was a better distribution, an increase with paclitaxel TRAIL of the distribution of virus in tumors. These are complex slides here, but essentially they want to show the following point. When you give paclitaxel TRAIL first, as opposed to giving HSV followed by paclitaxel TRAIL, you get a significantly, so the red here, you get a significantly slower tumor growth. This is shown here in the tumor growth delay, the red bar, it's paclitaxel first, followed by TRAIL, and you get a significantly longer growth delay, suggesting there's an advantage with creating those channels and helping the distribution of the virus inside the tumor. So this is to show that there's not always an advantage with cytotoxic agents. So these are studies we did several years ago looking at radiation. And radiation is, in normal tissues at least, in those days was known to induce significant fibrosis, significant collagen accumulation. There was no data for tumors. So we radiated tumors, and we found out that after 5 days, there was a significant upregulation of collagen in the tumor, shown here in red, and this is compared to control group. And then when we measured the hydraulic conductivity, or what we call the ease of fluid movement for a tumor, we find out there was a significant reduction in hydraulic in transport. So that would mean that if you want to combine, let's say, a large agent with radiation, you're probably better giving your large agent before you give your radiation, or at least give it at the same time. So I promised at the beginning that I would give you some indication on how we're starting to look in vivo on how to study extracellular matrix remodeling. We've published in Nature Medicine in 2003 how essentially we can look at collagen fibers in vivo, but in those days we're only looking at fibers. Now we're going to show results where we combine second harmonic imaging of the fibers with fibroblasts and see how the fibroblasts remodel the matrix. So what is second harmonic imaging? So the principle is the following. So you excite, so this again is our nodosal window. You excite at a given wavelength and you collect the light at half that wavelength. So for example here we excited at about 810 nanometers, collected the light at half that wavelength. And what you get when you do that, you get your second harmonic signal, which is shown here, the green, are the collagen fibers. So this is not immunosensing at all. This is optical, so imaging in living mice. And the red here is your blood vessels. And if you collect the light at higher wavelength, you get tissue autofluorescence. So it's a very specific signal that you can get. So what can we do with that? So we've looked for, and we had students that were looking, can we see with tumor progression real change in collagen fibers? It was very difficult, we could not. So we stimulated the tumors with relaxin. Relaxin is a small molecule, it's about the size of insulin, and it induces the production of matrix metalloproteinases, and it's known in some way to degrade the matrix. So when we give relaxin, this is what happened. So what we're doing here is following every day, actually we just show here every few days, but typically what we would do, we would select a few fibers in the tumor. So the graduate student does this, have to go back and with landmarks figure out what the fibers is looking at. And from day to day, it's kind of a little complex, but it's still is doable. And so you start relaxing treatment, and you start to see gaps that form in those fibers. And eventually, some of them will disappear. If you look at the untreated tumor, you see there's almost no change in the fibers. Okay, so what that meant for us? So we say, okay, we're changing structure, so maybe we have an increase in transport. So when we measured diffusion of a large molecular weight dextran 2 million, it was about a threefold increase in diffusion. It was about a twofold increase in diffusion of IgG. So the next question we had is, okay, that's fine. So why are these fibers changing in length? Why is the gap forming? Is it degradation? Could be. Is it other forms of interaction between the cells and the fibers that will form this? So what we did, we implanted tumors and in mice that have green fibroblasts. So the top channel here is the collagen channel. This is essentially the fibroblast channel, if you want. The red here is the collagen, and this is the fibroblast. And this is a cartoon depicting what's happening. So as time is going, what you'll see is that that collagen fiber is pulled up. So this is during relaxin treatment. That's one of the changes we saw that the cells could pull on the fibers. The other thing we saw was buckling. So here you see the length of the fiber, and now it starts to collapse on itself, and it's completely collapsed. So there's another way, you know, apart from degradation, where fibers can get shorter, and we think it's due to this buckling mechanism. And if you look at the cartoon down here, let it loop a little bit, seems that this cell here is doing most of the job in pulling and collapsing that fiber. So what can we do with this approach quantitatively? So we're able to characterize the mechanism by which relaxin influences the remodeling of the fibers. So we block for GMC6011, and we also block for beta-1 integrin, and we find out essentially that both inhibitors inhibited the decrease in fiber length. We can also look at interaction between a fiber and a cell and see how many pixels are interacting with the fiber and how that changed with treatment. And we were able to show that with, so you see here with relaxin, for example, there's an increase in interaction between the fibroblasts and the collagen fibers. If you block the if you block it with an antibody against beta 1, that inhibits this interaction. Whereas if you treat with GMC-011, which is a general MMP inhibitor, there's essentially no effect on what relaxin does in terms of interaction between the collagen and the fibers and the cells. So in summary, there's two barriers to interstitial transport. There's interstitial hypertension and the interstitial matrix. And we've shown that if you interfere with collagen synthesis or the assembly of collagen, you can definitely increase intratumoral penetration of large virals and virus. And we've also shown that the modulation of interstitial transport can improve the efficacy of oncolytic virotherapy. And the apoptosis induction is also able to increase viral spread and anti-tumor efficacy. And I think it's a significant thing, and what future studies is going to look into is our sequencing of different agents. This agent that modulate transport either through the extracellular matrix or even transport through the vascular barrier, if you want. The sequencing is going to be important there on how you do it. And we're getting evidence also with anti-angiogenic therapy, like what Michael showed with hypoxia. And we're getting some evidence also with larger cytotoxic agent that sequencing is very important. And last, showed that second mRNA imaging can be used to image collagen fibers and look at the interaction between the fibers and the fibroblasts. Thank you very much.